Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Mike Hillaby, Director of Legislative Affairs for Kenfer Kroll, for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always pleased to welcome back to the program Mike Hillaby, is Director of Legislative Affairs for Kenfer Kroll. Pleasure to have you back on the program, sir.
Thanks, Sam. Nice to be here.
You know, with a little time for reflection now, what did you make of the whole Roy Moore deal?
It was fairly stunning. I mean, Alabama's, everybody knows, is a conservative state. I think there'll be, you said there's some time between when we're recording this and when it may air, so we may find out even more about it. I think it's a pretty stunning defeat for the president, for Steve Bannon. I mean, he really has turned out to be Typhoid Mary in this and should be embarrassed, although I don't know he's capable of being embarrassed given his behavior and some of the things he says. But that said, it's still a long ways till primary season. It's a long ways till next November, and we'll see. But I think the message is it's not going to be easy to be a Republican in the ticket on the ticket next year.
What do you think this says to evangelicals in the South?
Well, I hope what it says to anybody everywhere, and the words being a little overused, but this kind of tribal, you know, culture we've created. You're on my side, you're on somebody else's side. You can't support someone simply because they're on your team, regardless of what you hear about them, regardless of what someone says, regardless of the facts that come out. Or in this case, some of them were accusations. We don't know all the details. But this sort of blind loyalty is not going to work. And just because someone says, hey, I agree with you on something that's important to you, be it religion, be it a liberal policy, be it a conservative policy, doesn't mean they're necessarily the best teammate for you.
When you look at now the thinnest of margins in the Senate, what does this say about, you know, does this make, you know, Bob Corker and Jeff Flake the most important Republicans through the end of this session?
Very well may. That's the challenge. And I think it says something that, you know, those of us in politics and people that pay attention to that have known for a long time. Congress, because of the way the seats are drawn, because of the control that process has over who we get to vote for, there are so few competitive elections left. That's the world we live in. And there'll be a handful of those seats that are going to be fought over, and it's going to be close. So the idea that a party is going to have a sweep and be able to sort of run roughshod over the other isn't going to work. Sadly, and I realize what I'm saying would lead to that means they have to figure out a way to govern and get along, but nobody's going to have a clear majority and can just get their will. Well, sadly, they haven't learned that either. It just makes it worse. So that's why Congress has really low approval ratings.
Well, that and a host of other things, I would say. You're being kind at that one. I saw a story just in this last week or so on redistricting, or actually on the census, and that they're going to do this online for the first time, and that there's not enough money being put towards this. This goes directly to what you're talking about, which is, you know, drawing the congressional boundaries at the end of the decade. How do you think this is going to play out?
I have read a little bit about that, and there's a number of other pieces I have not read, so there's some information I don't have. If it's true, what I've heard is certainly pretty scary, and that would be, at least that I'm aware of, the first time you've seem to have seen a White House deliberately try to inject politics into the census process. How can we do that in a way that benefits our side, rather than how do we do that in a way that gets an accurate count for the country? Because that is far more than about voting. If anybody or your listeners have spent any time looking at the data on the census, it's fascinating. You can find out all kinds of things about your own community and health and education, and that's exactly what it's there to do, not just to be used as a tool for voting. That may be, if you're a politician, you may think that's the most important thing they do, but it isn't. So having that data correct, having that data be fair and nonpartisan is really important. So if in fact what they're being accused of and trying to manipulate that process is going on, it's really scary.
Also, the number of undocumented immigrants that are normally counted because they're not going to be turned in to the government for deportation because they took part in a census. And it's really important when you have potentially 12 million or more immigrants without status that they are going to be terrified to come out of the shadows. So that whole process becomes skewed.
It does. And, you know, regardless of, I know that's a subject that brings out strong feelings in people, immigrants, legal or otherwise, pay taxes. They may not own a home, but they're renting and therefore paying property taxes that way. They're paying gas taxes or paying other things. And some of them are eligible and some are getting services. Regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, it would seem to me you'd want accurate information so you could at least know and make decisions.
One of the things that's been interesting for me to watch, when people were scared of Donald Trump becoming president, and I say, you know, we have three co-equal branches of government, and you will see those other branches of government come into play if any president oversteps what is considered lines. I thought it would be the Supreme Court that would be the major player on the judicial side, but in fact, it turns out to be the district courts.
Yeah, it's been very interesting seeing what that's happened on immigration bans and other kinds of things. And that's what I've certainly relied upon at the moments when I was most despondent about some of what we've seen. And again, regardless of your politics, some of the behavior has been pretty deplorable, and frankly on both sides, is to realize that, yes, the fact that we elect senators every 6 years, not every two, and that changed, the Supreme Court, the federal bench, that we could rely on that to be, okay, that's the moderating influence, exactly what the founding fathers had in mind. So, yeah, it is interesting to see at the district court how much pushback the president's gotten on some things.
And so how do you think that that may play into the census and redistricting if there are certain federal judges that decide that this is inappropriate? Do you think that they could force the government to put more money into this to make it work?
You know, that's a fantastic question. I don't have the answer. It'll be really interesting to see what happens and what kind of pushback. And I hope that all of those judges, regardless of who appointed them and where they are on the political spectrum, would be sure they're thinking about what their job is, not try to do that as a, well, I'm the last resort and I'm going to do this because I have to push back. They need to follow the law, obviously, and hopefully they do that. Most of them are pretty good jurists, and you would hope so. I think the Supreme Court could be busy the next couple of years.
To say the least. You were former chief of staff to Governor Kenny Gwynn, and it's an interesting time as you go into an election cycle that most people don't understand that the first budget of a new governor is actually written by the previous governor.
It is. It takes a long time to build that budget. That process is already starting. The instructions have gone out to agencies, start building things. This governor will give some instructions to agencies saying, you know, the Economic Forum met about a week ago before we are taping this. They're going to give some estimates on revenue by law. That's the estimate that the governor and the legislature use. And those happen periodically over the biennium, as everybody that follows this as closely as you and I do know. So he has that information. He'll make some decisions and say, generally, agencies, you need to budget flat. You need to cut a little bit. There is a little bit of money to put in for some maintenance kinds of items if you need to replace some things, add some positions to deal with caseload growth in Medicaid or K-12 education, whatever the issue is. But he can certainly also say, these are some other priorities I have to protect some of the things that particularly Governor Sandoval has done in education and other areas, and in health and human services, and say, I'm going to put some money into that. Any governor will work with their successor, and I think particularly Governor Sandoval, who is a very good man, will work with whoever is elected and make sure that that transition happens smoothly and that person has an opportunity to have their input on the budget. But by the time the election's over in November, that it's pretty far down the pike, and it's not easy. It's not just pushing a button on a computer, as we joke, to fix that. So he'll have a lot of input on that. And again, I know, just knowing him and knowing his staff, they'll work very conscientiously with whoever his successor is going to be to give them an opportunity to come in and put some fingerprints on that. But you're right. That's, and I think a lot of people forget that in the every 4 years or every 8 years.
And it's going to be interesting. The person who did that or helped with the transition from Gibbons to from Gwynn to Gibbons and then Gibbons to Sandoval was Steve Robinson.
He was. And I think a number of us talked with the people we knew in transition about some of the history of state government or positions and what kinds of things had gone on and things to look out for. That's one of the nice things about having worked in the governor's office for a while. You tend to get those calls from people on either side, and it's always nice to feel like maybe you have a little something to offer. But, yeah, Steve Robinson was really an important part of that and knows state government well and has been in it a long time. So it's good to have some of that institutional knowledge.
All right, let's take a break. More with Mike Hillaby when we come back.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
ProGroup Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. ProGroup Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. ProGroup Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Mike Hillaby. He currently serves as Director of Legislative Affairs for Kenfer Kroll and was former Chief of Staff to Governor Gwynn. So as we look at the election cycle that's coming up, it looks to be a real interesting one on both sides.
Boy, it does. Don't ask me to get out the crystal ball because I don't know what's going to happen by November. We've already had some announcements in the legislature of people that aren't going to run, that aren't going to seek re-election. They had issues in their own lives, need to raise a family, need to be able to hold a job. This is, I think people forget, it is tough to be a legislator. While it can be fun and rewarding in some ways, it doesn't pay very well, and it's a lot of time gone from your family, particularly for the folks from Las Vegas. So we have a couple of members of the Assembly, Amber Joyner from here in Reno, Irene Bustamante Adams from Las Vegas, who have said they're not going to seek re-election, both, I think, important people and influential people in their own caucuses. People looking to change houses, people looking to move up. Aaron Ford, the current Senate Majority Leader, a Democrat, is running for AG, but he's midterm. So he's going to be either the Attorney General in the state or back in the Senate, presumably Majority Leader. There are a lot of moving pieces. And again, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how much momentum Democrats build between now and November based on Virginia and Alabama and some of the other midterm things that will happen. Will they really get out that ground game? Will the culinary and other unions really work to motivate people and get them out, given what they've faced nationally? It could really change the complexion of the electorate.
I thought it was very interesting. I really like Amber Joyner. She used to be a pundit on this show before she got into the legislature, and unfortunately she chose not to do programs like this since she served in the legislature. But she raised some very good points on saying that she wasn't going to run for re-election, which is the amount of money it costs to be a legislator, that how much time you have to spend without insurance, with low or no pay. Isn't it time for us to look at, you know, making this a real job for somebody, even if it's still the 120-day session, but something that's realistic rather than what we currently have now, which is ridiculous.
I think you raise a really important point. I think it's certainly something that we ought to be discussing because it does limit the type of people that can and are willing to serve. And you throw that into the mix with what has frankly become a much more caustic environment around that building, in the process, the kind of scrutiny you're under and I've complained about this for a long time, as the caucuses, though the Democratic and Republican caucuses in both houses, the four of them, hire more staff, bring in more campaign people, often from out of state, looking to build a resume for their next job. That's made the process that much worse. They've got people that are thinking campaign all the time. You're going to as an elected official anyway, but when you sort of get in that insular environment, that bubble in the building, and are surrounded by your own campaign people who have then moved into staff positions, with the caucus or in the office, it makes it that much worse. And some of those people can be great. Others, not so much. That hasn't helped.
And, you know, you have the input of something that didn't exist years ago. I mean, in fact, if you go back probably a couple of decades now, when lobbyists were forced off of the floor so they could not go and talk to legislators directly, now with the total usage of things like Twitter, that legislators are being hit on constantly, that's a very important factor for somebody that goes and lobbies at the legislature.
It is. The way you communicate has changed a lot. How quickly information goes around the building has changed, and where it gets, and also how quickly criticism gets to you. All of that said, it still never ceases to interest me that by the end of the session, all of us, you get pretty caught in that bubble in Carson City, and it's really easy to forget what the average voter, what the average person is thinking. That's why I've always enjoyed going home, and when the kids were little, you go sit on the sidelines of their soccer game or a track meet or what have you and realize, yeah, I'm not living in the real world Monday through Friday in Carson City. And hopefully everybody remembers to sort of pull up out of that dive once in a while before you hit the mountain.
All right, let's take a break. More with Mike Hillaby when we come back.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
I'm Paul Enos, CEO of the Nevada Trucking Association.
Truck drivers are some of the hardest working people you'll meet, delivering over 70% of America's freight and 92% of Nevada's. When there's a natural disaster, they're delivering critical supplies to help those communities recover and rebuild. Every sector of the economy and our nation's military rely on truck drivers. So let's take a moment to say thank you. On the open road or city streets, our truck drivers are rolling to make our economy and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Mike Hillaby. He's the Director of Legislative Affairs with Kiefer Kroll. Energy is going to continue to be one of the biggest stories going forward here. How do you see it playing out? How do you see the role of NV Energy? Is it going to be that they are the people that just have the poles and the transmission lines? Who's going to be the server of last resort when you need power?
Well, if I had the answer to that question, I'd be hired by a lot more people, I suppose.
This is an opportunity,
yes,
Mike.
Yes, exactly, an opportunity. Let me tell you how
this
smart I am.
This is your elevator pitch.
Yeah, exactly. Let me tell you how smart I am, and you can hire me, or if you've already hired me, you can decide whether to fire me or not. That's a really big question, obviously. The question that would go back before the voters on the Energy Choice Initiative is polling really, really well. Again, I've always said, pick your utility, but be it, I don't want to pick on NV Energy, pick your electric utility, your phone company, whatever. It's a sort of benign dislike of that utility provider. You know, you write them a check. It doesn't take much messaging to push that from sort of passive dislike to, I'm really angry at those guys. So in that respect, the proponents have a pretty good edge on that. It's not hard to get people fired up. For a lot of people, the questions have become intertwined with rooftop solar and energy choice, and they're not. They're different issues. But for a lot of voters that think that's what they're voting for. But regardless of what happens, if the measure passes, we have a really short time frame to try to figure out how to do something. And this experiment is one that people in other states, big companies, other countries are actively watching Nevada. And I'm hearing that from folks, that people are really looking here to see if we could do it as quickly as it's been envisioned and completely go the other direction from the regulated monopoly. That it's a short timeline and it's going to be hard. And back to our earlier conversation about a part-time legislature, it's even going to be harder for them to figure out how to do that, because all the initiative says is you shall pass a law making choice possible.
Well, and one of the things that concerns me is if for some reason there is a power shortage where we need to import power rapidly, that you could see price spikes go up incredibly, as we saw, you know, during the time of the Enron scandal.
You could. Now, you know, I've sat through a number of these interim committees meetings and the governor's committee on energy choice, and depending on who you listen to, there is a substantial amount of power around. The NV Energy and other companies, the One Nevada Line and others, we have access to other markets. We're obviously exporting a lot of renewable energy into California because they've set their renewable portfolio standards so high. That
50% by 2030.
Yeah, so the amount of power that they're supposed to have from renewable sources, they're looking to buy from this market. That also means that their traditional energy production is going to be available for other states who don't have as high a portfolio standard. So there are a number of things from the people I've talked to and watching that process that would make me think that a shortage is not entirely likely. That spot market can be difficult for folks. But for NV Energy, who's pointed out how much they've spent, and I won't get the number right, so I won't try to say it, that they have in long-term energy contracts already bought up. Again, how you unwind that when you've set up that monopoly process and said, you make these decisions prudently, we'll guarantee you this amount of return, and how that's going to work, unwinding that's not going to be easy.
And you're talking billions of dollars.
It's billions, yes.
And who would be, so I guess in the end, the ratepayers would be the ones that would be liable.
Exactly. And the question is, who will be a ratepayer at that point? As some of the large users get permission to exit the system, you saw some of the big casinos, they've paid some substantial exit fees, this idea that for the power company, we built some infrastructure to accommodate your projected demand. Our deal was we were going to be paid back over 20 years for that. You're now leaving and not going to pay us. You need to pay us something now for that so we don't ship that to the other ratepayers. I think that's one of the really interesting questions as all this happens. As more of those major users leave, and you've had some now file challenges on the amount that they had to pay, will there be enough of a base there? Does that potentially leave the average small business or average homeowner on the hook to pay for some of those stranded costs? So that would be tough.
And it's interesting, too, that John Wellinghoff, who was the first consumer advocate for the state, is leading the charge on behalf of the solar industry.
Exactly. So, and left Nevada, spent some time on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is a big deal.
Big job, yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to watch all of that. And there are some real potential benefits if we pick the right lessons from the right states that have competitive markets and pull the right pieces together. It could be very good for Nevada consumers.
And that's where we have to leave it. Mike Hillaby, always a pleasure to have you on the program, sir.
Thanks so much. Good to be here.
Thank you. And we'll be right back.
Sully Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Take Nevada Newsmakers with you wherever you go by downloading podcasts of the show. It's available on iTunes and Stitcher. We'll see you on the next broadcast.